You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt, my main man, OJ McDuffie, and DJ Preach in the tank. What's happening, gentlemen?
What's up, Big Seth?
What's going on?
It's a great day, fellas. It's a great day. You know, we were going to have this guy in the tank a couple of weeks ago, and then, you know, the world had other plans for us. But, you know, you can always count on Jay Fiedler. So here he is making his first appearance in the tank. Jay, what's going on, man?
Seth, Juice, I am doing great and happy to be here on the tank with you guys.
Man, looking good, kid. Looking good.
Yeah, you know, I had to put a little gel. I had to, you know, do the little Pat Riley do up top because otherwise I'd be out, you know, with the Jupro, as Seth knows all about that.
Well, I once did, but now there's just not a whole lot left, man. But I'm very familiar with the Jupro. Yes, yeah. I grew
waste
up.
Waste of time and money to mess with his hair right now. It's just a waste of time and waste of money.
Yeah, I might just go like you, Juice, soon. Just get the straight edge.
Well, you know what, though? You got to make sure you got to test it first and make sure you got a good shaped head, man. Otherwise, man, don't do it, man. Just comb it over and do what you got to do, Jay.
And there's no turning back once you go. Once it's gone, there's no turning back. So, Jay, look, the Dolphins quarterback position has always been a glamour position, right? And seems to be again, you know, with the recent draft pick, and we'll talk about all that stuff. But your journey, I think, I mean, we're going to talk about you as a Miami Dolphins quarterback, but I think your journey to Miami and just to the NFL in general is almost probably more important, quite frankly, than your experience here, as much as we love to talk about your time here. So give us a little background. Talk a little bit. I mean, I know your father, right? The late, great Kenny Fiedler was a larger-than-life individual and was a legendary high school basketball yep. coach in Oceanside there, and sports were always a part of your family. So talk a little bit about that and why maybe it was football that led the way and ultimately took you to Dartmouth.
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up playing every single sport imaginable. And, you know, like most guys, you know, there's the big debate nowadays with the multi-sport versus, you know, specialization in youth sports. And, you know, for me, I was playing everything. I know, Juice, you were the same way growing up. You know, I played football in the fall. And as soon as that season was over, it was on to basketball. And, you know, once basketball was done, you put that ball down and you know, it was either baseball or track and field in the springtime. And then you catch back up in the summertime with your football again. And for me, that was the way it was through high school. You know, I actually thought, you know, in high school, football probably would have been, you know, third on the list, you know, for me, you know, more so just because of the success and, you know, that I had in high school and the other sports. You know, I grew up in a basketball family, like you mentioned before. Yeah, you know, my dad was a high school basketball coach. That was, you know, the first passion in sports, and you know, that was kind of the sport that lived in on Judith Lane in Oceanside. Had some battles with my brother out in the driveway growing up, and dad was always there to give some pointers and tips and drills for us to do. And then, you know, in track and field in high school, you know, I was a state champion, pentathlon, guys. I had the New York state record in the pentathlon. If you ask me, I thought I was going to be in the Olympics.
That's right.
You know, I had the Dan and Dave posters on my wall
and, that's awesome.
and all that. But, you know, in the end, you know, football just kind of rose to the top. And, you know, although my team in high school didn't have the same success as my basketball team or individually in track and field, you know, I did get noticed as an athlete, you know, on the football field, and kind of started off one of the first spread offenses, doing a run and shoot offense, you know, back when I was in high school in the late 80s. So, you know, really showcased my ability to get outside the pocket, throw on the run, do a lot of different things that, you know, scouts and recruiters, you know, like to see. So, you know, it took me to Dartmouth College, where, you know, again, I was a two sport athlete at Dartmouth, played football and ran track. And that was one of the reasons I ended up going there, was because of, you know, my ability to, be able to do both.
Education, Jay.
That too. You know,
and the future connections, possibly. You know, who knows?
Of course. Yeah, that was certainly a factor. But you know, with all things in consider, you know, I was all the schools I was looking at were high academic schools. You know, in the first place, and you know, when it came down to deciding those, you know, I had a visit with Stanford. I was recruited by Duke and Virginia. And a number of the Ivies, but the D1 schools, you know, if you were going to play football, you weren't going to run track. You know, especially as a quarterback, you know, they need you there in spring football. And every coach that I spoke to said, if you're going to make it in football as a quarterback, you know, there's no way that can have you sit and be out in spring practices and then put you in the fall. So the Ivy League was, you know, the direction I went happy I made that decision.
Yeah, you're probably smart for not, you know, going and playing spring ball. That's where they try to kill you more than anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I know it. I know. But then again, coming off of football season and going right into winter track and spring track wasn't a, you know, walk in the park either.
Yeah, no doubt. But you had a hell of a career at Dartmouth at quarterback. You know, you talk about the athleticism, man, and I witnessed it firsthand. You know, the track and field, the baseball, basketball. Everything that you talk about growing up, and it translates into football. Most football players, in my opinion, and I might be a little biased, we're the best athletes out there anyways. You know what I mean? And you showed that off. But it's my understanding, Jay, that you got an invite to the Senior Bowl after Dartmouth, but it was as a punter. So you didn't say anything about punting. You talk about all the other things you did, basketball, track and field, you know, football, of course, and baseball, but as a punter. But I heard your dad wasn't having that. He was not having that shit.
Well, I'll tell you what happened with the Senior Bowl. Is an interesting story. I actually got an early invite to the Senior Bowl before, you know, the senior season. And that's kind of how, you know, they were doing it back then. They'd send out some early invites to guys that they thought were going to be, ready to go. And then, you know, my senior season at Dartmouth, I had a good season. We had a, you know, real good team, but it wasn't as, you know, my junior year was what really stood out to everyone. And you know, I was number one in FCS, 1AA back then in passing efficiency. It was basically me and Steve McNair were the two 1AA quarterbacks,
wow,
you know, on top of all the lists, you know, when it came to passing yards, efficiency, total yardage, you know. And then I had a little bit of a drop off my senior year. And, you know, when it came time to the All-Star games in the end, I got an invite to the East-West Shrine game, which I accepted. And then the Senior Bowl rescinded the invite. And they said, well, you know, we got a couple other quarterbacks here. But if you want to still take that invite that we sent you back in June, you could come and be a punter.
So, hell no.
You know, so once I had the East-West Shrine game invite, I said, you know, a nice way, I said, screw you, you know, to the Senior Bowl.
It's a good thing you were talking to him and not your dad. I bet he wouldn't have been as nice.
Exactly. He'd have used some more colorful language than that. But, you know, it was great. And then we also had, at the time, we had the Ivy League All-Star Game, which was an unbelievable trip where they took the seniors in the Ivy League, all the All-Star seniors, out to Japan for a week. So we traveled to Japan. And then I actually flew right from Japan back to San Francisco, where they had the East-West Shrine game. Was in Palo Alto at the time. You know, did two weeks on the road of football in Japan and California. And then the East-West Shrine game, it was, you know, had a great appearance there and, you know, won a co-MVP of the East-West Shrine game. It was me and Jeff Garcia were co-MVPs of that game. And neither one of us got drafted, and it took, you know, each of us, you know, probably, you know, a minimum of 4 or 5 years to find our way to a starting job in the NFL.
Man, that's so crazy, Seth, because I played in Japan in the Japan Bowl back in the day. So that was back in, what, 92, 93 when I played there. So I didn't know it had transitioned into basically the Ivy League game out there. And Japan was awesome, wasn't it? Tell me about that trip right there, man. I had a blast in Japan.
Oh yes, you know, I was the only one that was, you know, still looking forward to playing anymore, and I had the week you know, the week ahead for the East West Shrine game, so I couldn't enjoy it as much as all the other guys that were on that trip.
I don't know, Jay. I know you, man. I bet you had a good
time. You know, he found a way to enjoy
early,
that.
Early trip. In the week, I had some fun.
You know what makes me mad, Jay, is that I didn't like sushi then. I never had it before. And they were just all these amazing spreads of sushi they kept giving us, you know what I mean? And I was like, you know what? I'm going to McDonald's or Burger King or whatever, KFC down the street. That's when I know that could be semi-normal for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was fun out there. They rolled out the red carpet for us, you know, hanging out in Tokyo and spending a night or two in Roppongi. And
Roppongi. I heard some Prince songs there for the first time. They hadn't even been released in the States yet, but they were in Japan already, man. And that's where I became a big Prince fan at one point.
Oh, it was a fantastic Roppongi. City, great experience.
Well, just listening to that almost makes me exhausted. And that's just the end of your college journey. So screw the Senior Bowl, right? East-West Shrine turns out to be a real positive thing. But then the long road, man. Philadelphia, Amsterdam. There was a coaching gig at Hofstra.
Yep.
Which, by the way, so it was pointed out to me, Juice, was Dan Quinn, the coach of the Falcons, was he on that same coaching staff?
I'll tell you, that staff that we had there and you know, even some of the players, you know, that was a great football room. You know, Dan Quinn was a D-line coach. Kyle Flood was the offensive line coach. And if you look at Atlanta's staff right now, there are a number of guys that wow. Quinn, you know, had relationships way back.
You didn't get the dial up? He didn't.
Yeah, I know. Right? You know, Dave Brock is down there. He was head coach at Delaware. And, you know, he's a receiver coach. Raheem Morris was a safety on that team.
Wow.
You know, ended up head coach in the league. And, you know, he's an assistant down there in Atlanta as well. And, you know, that was a fun room, fun staff to be a part of.
It sounds like it. And then so a year there, then Minnesota, then Jacksonville. Jay, you're 6 years into this thing and just grinding it out, right, for any opportunity. Was there ever a point where you were just like, fuck it, I've got an Ivy League education. I've done my football thing. I've had enough of this shit. I'm going to go out and make real money.
I thought, you know, well, it's funny. I actually, when I was coaching at Hofstra for those 2 years, you know, it was 94, 95 in Philadelphia. I got released in 96. Actually got picked up. I was over with your boy Kajana in Cincinnati for about 2 weeks, Juice. You know, his rookie year, he was the man, just got drafted there. And, you know, they brought me in just, you know, kind of a favor to give me a shot. But I was, you know, fifth guy in camp 2 weeks late into their camp. So, you know, really wasn't much of a shot. And then, you know, like you said, I spent 2 years coaching at Hofstra and a year playing out in Amsterdam. And during that time, there was definitely, you know, what the heck are you doing right now moments. But I remember one time my high school coach actually used to host and still does. He hosts a coaches clinic in Long Island that I'd go to all the time and meet up with all the coaches. And, you know, I'd speak at an occasion. And during that clinic, he had one of the coaches who was assistant coach at the New York Jets at the time. He said, you know, listen, you know, Jay's really struggling to get back in the league. You know, give him a little pep talk and everything. So, you know, I'm expecting to hear, you know, a little nice motivational speech and everything. And the first thing he says to me is, you know, you went to Dartmouth, right? You know, you got an Ivy League education. You know, the chances of you getting back in the league are pretty slim. You know, if I were you, I'd, you know, get that job on Wall Street and use that education. And, you know, to me, it was kind of a, you know, extra motivation to prove people wrong. You know, anytime you have doubters, you want to push forward and prove everyone wrong. And then, you know, the other thing that I always felt in the back of my mind was, you know, that degree isn't going anywhere.
Right.
But my window of opportunity to get back in the NFL is small.
True.
You know, so I'm going to exhaust it as long as I can. As you know, what ended up happening was it was really a last ditch effort. You know, in the winter January, February 98, I put together a VHS tapes. You know, with all my highlights from the East-West Shrine game, from college, from the few preseason games that I played in Philadelphia. You know, my agent and high school coach ended up putting together a 3-page letter and, you know, I went to the post office, mailed out 30 copies to every single team, and I got one call back. And, you know, the real interesting story about that was the guy who called me was a guy named Chip Myers, who was the quarterback coach for the, Minnesota Vikings. And a few years earlier, he was an assistant coach, with Bruce Coslett in New York Jets. Now, my senior year in college, we had a freshman on our team named J.J. Kozlik, who was an offensive lineman. It was Bruce's son. And if there was anyone in the NFL that actually remembered me from college and you know, knew that I had, you know, some pretty good games and had that competitive drive with a few fourth quarter comebacks throughout that senior year, it was Chip Myers, because his son was best friends with J.J. Kozlik. So, you know, that was the only guy in the NFL, you know, after 4 years of, you know, really not getting any playing time. You know, I came out in 94. This is 98. You know, Ivy League guy. You know, no one really knew who I was except Chip Myers. And it was that connection, you know, to Dartmouth that allowed me to get back into the league. And, you know, I got called up from them, you know, went into a workout with five other guys and really shined during that. And they signed me on the spot. And the rest is history. You know, played that season in 98 in Minnesota. Went to Jacksonville the following year and down to Miami in 2000.
Yeah, Jacksonville. Huh? Yeah. Go there, huh? You know, you know, I really try not to bring up too much Jacksonville, Jay, you know, but we have to. I mean, we have to bring it up. Because I've always thought that it was like, seemed like that game came kind of became like an audition for you. It helped all the people with the Dolphins when we were out there looking in free agency. But comes to find out that Tom Hecker Jr. actually was watching your final regular season game, even before that playoff game.
Exactly.
I think it was a game against Cincinnati. He had over 300 yards passing. You know,
yeah, take that, Cincinnati.
Yeah, take that, the nasty natty. Yeah, they had you, what, fifth, you said? That's what they get, right? You had
that's
to put
right.
it on them
that's
like
right.
that. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
How much did you see, like, that game and all those other games, your opportunity, you know, to get back in the league? I know you guys were pretty much solidified in your playoff position at that point. You were behind Mark Brunell, I think, at that point, right?
Yes.
And, you know, and how could – did you ever think that, you know, that game in Jacksonville would be Danny's last game and the beginning of your career down here in Miami?
Well, you know, you never look at it. I wasn't looking ahead, certainly, at opportunities down the road. But, you know, looking back at it, you know, it's, you know, amazing serendipity that things just happen a certain way. You know, like you said, the last regular season of Jacksonville, it was a game that we actually needed to get home field advantage through through the playoffs. So, you know, we did need to get a win. You know, Cincinnati wasn't, you know, a great team at that time, but, you know, we couldn't just go in and roll over and win that game. We had to play hard. And, you know, it was my first start in the NFL. And, you know, for me, I was taking it, you know, as an audition for everyone in the NFL, right. You know, not knowing that, you know, Miami was looking at it down the road. And, you know, certainly, you know, Mark Brunell was hurt going into that game. And there was question marks going into the game against Miami after the bye week, whether he was going to come back or, you know, whether I was going to start. So, you know, I never knew that.
That wasn't in the scouting report.
Tom Coughlin is, you know, one of those guys, he's never tipping his hand to anyone. So, you know, no matter what was going on in-house, he was going to keep it tight to the vest and make sure that Miami was scouting both of us. And for me, luck of the draw, good situation. I had a great game, you know, going into that. And, you know, ended up coming in that Miami game, you know, actually before halftime. I wasn't going to bring it up.
Yeah.
But, you
know. Whatever, man. We remember.
Whatever, man.
Was that before or after the sprinklers came on?
Fuck.
Man, I tell you what, man. I think I didn't even have my helmet on yet, and it was 21-0. I think it was ugly early in that game.
I was in the owner's box, and I wanted to leave at halftime.
Whatever, Preach.
Yeah, way to give up on us. You didn't think we had a chance back, Preach? Golly. So
did we score in the second half? I'm not sure.
So obviously now we've talked about what was going on behind the scenes, at least from the scouting department, but. Here you are, free agent. This is your big shot. As you said, your first start, which is – I didn't realize it was your first start. Now you think about it, it makes sense. At 300-yard passing game, your first start.
Yep.
Clearly showed that you could play at a playoff-level football. And who all was knocking on the door at that point, Jay? You know, go from fighting and clawing and scratching. Was there anybody else besides the Dolphins? And, you know, why Miami? And walk us through what a Dave Wannstedt sales pitch sounds like for a free agent.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, you know, Miami was first to the table. You know, they kind of knew that you know, they were moving on from Dan at the time. And for me, just looking at the situation, you know, it was wide open competition. Coach Wanstead told me straight out. He said, you know, we're not giving you a job. We're not, you know, signing you to be the starter, but we're going to give you the opportunity to compete for it. And Damon Heward was coming back as the backup to Dan for a few years. And, you know, they were going to give him a shot to compete against whoever they brought in, which, you know, ended up being myself. And, you know, the two of us through, you know, that off season and into the preseason, you know, we're going back and forth competing for that starting job.
And I want to get into that in a little bit, but real quick, just going back to that recruiting phase.
Yeah.
So from what, you know, so we had to call Brian Levy, right? We couldn't have you on without calling Brian to do a little digging. And he said, and it's amazing to discuss this now, because, you know, if I think about that quarterback room then and the quarterback room now, the quarterback room this year is going to have an Ivy League quarterback, a Jewish quarterback, and Chan Gailey, you know? And so we had some combination of those things with a few less guys, obviously, back then. But Chan Gailey took you to lunch, which makes sense. You got a free agent coming in. You take him to lunch. You're trying to – but he went to Longhorn? Like, they couldn't take you down to Prime 112 or something? They took you to Longhorn? Is that accurate?
Yes, it was. Yeah, we were right around the facility.
Yeah, you know, damn near could have walked
the
there.
Facility, and yeah, took I don't know what kind of car it was, and it certainly wasn't a limousine over to over to Longhorn. And yeah, you know, I would have been fine with La Spada's over there too.
Right.
Might have been a better choice. La Spada's right, that's for sure.
You know, Jay, I remember that. I remember that 2000 season, because once I retired, I was the biggest fan of, obviously, of the organization and of the team. And, you know, like your whole career, man, nothing was ever handed to you, ever. So you were in a competition, big time battle. You talk about with Damon Heward. You know, he was like pretty much going to be the heir apparent to Dan Marino. He had some opportunities to go in there and play. Danny banged up or whatever. And even Danny kind of endorsed him for the job, I think.
Yeah, he did.
At one point, you know. So tell me, what was that competition like? And, you know, I see how you've handled competition. It seems like you've always come out on top. And, you know, I know that fight in you, big dog. Tell me a little bit about that competition you had.
Well, no doubt. And, you know, we certainly talked a little bit about my journey just to get there. So the struggles to get that opportunity, I wasn't going to let anyone outwork me. That was first and foremost.
Yeah.
You know, I showed up, you know, I was the first one there the second that the building was allowed to be open for off-season work. And, you know, spent a lot of time with John Gamble in the off-season, you know, strengthening, conditioning, getting myself in great shape, and I thought I had a really good, you know, mini camp and OTA season with that. And then we get into training camp, and you know, I'm kind of slated in you know, in that one position still in a competition, but we're you know, heading into that first preseason game, and I got a twinge in my back that was kind of bothering me for you know, about a week or so. And, you know,
sure, it wasn't a knife or anything, was it? Okay, twins. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, but, you know, the trainers and I, we couldn't figure it out for a little bit of time, but it just kept nagging and it kept getting a little bit worse, and it started radiating down the leg a little bit. And, you know, we came to find out that I had a torn labrum in my hip. And, you know, when the team was traveling for the first preseason game, I was going under the knife to get my hip fixed as one of the first arthroscopic hip surgeries. You know, and I had no idea, you know, whether I was going to be able to, you know, even play the season after, you know, after going under the knife for, you know, for that. But the doctor said, hey, you know, we can get you back on the field probably in 3 weeks. And, you know, I literally went into the surgery. The doctor who was there was a great guy, Dr. Mark Philippon. He's, you know, the pioneer of hip surgery. Luckily for me, he was based down in Florida at the time. And while the team was away on the preseason game, you know, the facility wasn't available for me. Dr. Philippon actually had me sleep over at his house and had me in his pool the next day.
Wow.
Getting my hip moving again, and getting me on track until the trainers came back and could resume that, you know, PT and getting back. And, you know, 20 days later, I was, you know, back out on the field and was able to get in that last preseason game and, you know, show that I was physically ready to start the season.
Yeah. One thing we know about you, Jay, man, always tough as hell, man. That's just one example of your toughness, man, your grit, your grind, and you want to be out there with your teammates, man. But it's also something you got to think about in this whole situation too, between you and Damon.
one of you were going to be replacing an icon. Tell me about the challenges that was going to be. You know, one of you were going to be replacing Dan Marino. You know how they feel about Danny in South Florida. So that was had to be challenging as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know that's going to hang over your head. But, you know, my philosophy going into it was, you know, I don't care, you know, what I do on the field, you know, off the field. You know, my number one priority was to earn the respect of the guys in the locker room first. I could care less what the media, the fans, you know, were thinking about it, you know, going into that. And then number two, just keep any, you know, distractions, you know, of all the talk about Marino and following him at bay. And, you know, it wasn't easy, except, you know, that the weekly press conferences and conference calls with all the, you know, the opposing media, literally the same questions every single week, right, over and over again. And it all came back to, you know, following Marino. So, you know, if you weren't hearing it from, you know, fans and people around town, you'd hear it from the opposing media and all that. So, you know, the ability to just keep those distractions away and focus on, you know, what I had to do to go out and win games and help the team succeed. That was where my focus was.
Did it ever wear on you, Jay? Did it ever, you know, was there ever a point where you're like, God, is this question ever going to stop? Or did you just kind of accept that that's what it was going to be because Dan was Dan and you had to have this other focus, as you just mentioned?
Well, look, you know, like we talked about earlier, you know, it took me 5 years to get a shot in the NFL.
Right.
You know, I was out of the league for 2 years. You know, there was nothing with any questions or criticism that was going to wear on me, for that amount of time.
Yeah, you were kind of prepped for it. But, you know, in a lot of ways, it might have been it's interesting that you say that. And look, you beat out Damon and that's the way it went. But if Damon had taken that position, you know, his path was different. And it might have been interesting to see, even though he had a close relationship with Dan, what that would have been like. So, you were battle worn at that point.
That's right. Yes, I was
ready for it. So Juice, there's something else. And Jay just alluded to the press conferences. And there's something else that was important to mention. You know, when I was there, we were an all Jewish PR staff, and then we bring in Jay Fiedler. I got to tell you, when you had a press availability, it was almost like the law firm of Fiedler, Green, Gulkus, and Levitt. Every time you know, that's something that probably never happened before. It'll happen again. And we joke about it, but seriously, what was it like being a Jewish quarterback? And there aren't a whole lot of you. What was it like being a Jewish quarterback in South Florida? And maybe the opportunities. And so as much as you had these other challenges with replacing Dan, you also were bringing something that had never been seen down here.
Yeah, well, certainly. You know, it's funny. You bring up the press conferences, and I got to go back to, you know, the story of my first press conference with the Miami Dolphins when I was introduced, you know, after the signing. And, you know, I'm in the media room and you know, Harvey's kind of in the background overseeing everything. And all of a sudden, you know, one of the questions came up and you also mentioned my dad and my dad owned the summer camp that I used to go to, you know, as a kid called Brookwood Camp, so which, you know, I'm now the owner director of. And, you know, my dad was the ultimate salesman with that. So he said, you know, hey, make sure at some point you kind of get in, you know, Brookwood Camps on that.
Camps. Family business, man.
Old pops.
So I'm still going here now, you know, promoting Brookwood Camps as well. But we're sitting in the, you know, in the introductory press conference. And, you know, somehow I you know, kind of mentioned that my dad owns a summer camp in Glen Spey, New York. And all of a sudden in the background, I hear that, you know, Harvey's, you know, high-pitched voice. Wait, Glen Spey? Hold on. What? You know, and he totally just interrupts the whole press conference, comes up. You know, which camp is that? I said, you know, Brookwood Camps. And it turns out Harvey went to Brookwood Camps as a kid. And, you know, it was just a, you know, a random thing that came up. But, you know, you talk about Jewish geography and the connections, you know, that you have. And, you know, certainly, you know, back to your original question, you know, being a Jewish quarterback in South Florida, you know, I probably got invited to every single bar mitzvah and wedding around town. And certainly a fun experience just, you know, being in that South Florida Jewish community and you know, having that status, you know, as a Dolphin quarterback.
And you know what, Jay, man, and you hear that, man, and there's a lot of things that most people don't see. I saw it a lot with you, man. Where'd you get that swagger that you have, man? I know you have the toughness, but you also bring a little swag with that toughness, man. Where'd that come from? Is that from your pops, where you grew up, or the people you hung out with, man? But you had that swagger with you. You still carry. I've seen you recently, and you still have that swagger. Where'd that come from?
Well, you know, I think that was growing up in my family. You know, I was always, you know, kind of chasing after my older brother and following around with all of his friends. But, you know, also just growing up with my dad as high school basketball coach in New York City high school, you know, I'd show up to the practices as a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old kid. You know, I was a little kid on the side with the basketball and challenging, you know, the high school guys to one-on-one games or foul shooting contests. And, you know, it started all the way back then. And, you know, certainly, you know, Springfield Gardens and Queens, New York, you know, had guys with a lot of swagger there. So I saw it firsthand.
And a lot of shit talk too, huh?
Absolutely. That was the introduction to Anthony Mason. You brought him up, you know, earlier. That was, you know, Anthony was, you know, really like a family member, you know, with us. He grew up with just his mom in Queens, and my dad kind of took on that role of father figure for him. And you know, it was more from Anthony's side that, you know, he just clinged on to my dad. And, you know, when he went on to college and started getting his opportunities, in the NFL, and he had a similar path, as me. You know, he played overseas in Turkey and Israel and South America. And,
wow,
you know, before he got a shot with Pat Riley and the New York Knicks. So, you know, that was something that, you know, a little bit of, you know, going back to my story, a little bit of a blueprint of, you know, how much, you know, persistence and perseverance, you know, can ultimately, you know, get you to your goal.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Really is.
But yeah, that swag. I know you talk about that.
That swag.
And we've talked about that. A lot of people don't, you know, you wouldn't have expected it, or they don't think
right.
about it. They think about Dartmouth and these other things. But yeah, Jay, I always said Jay had a little shit to him, man.
He definitely did.
And, you know, with that, Jay, and we've seen the T-shirts. We had Marty Booker on at one point. We talked about it was like 14 different quarterbacks he played with during his career.
Yep, yep.
He almost got emotional listening to it. and they constantly down here talk about the fact that, you know, what the quarterback position has been here in Miami since Dan retired. And we hope, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick did a remarkable job in difficult circumstances this past year. And obviously there's a lot of hope of what Tua can become. We won a lot of games with you under center, man. We won a lot of games. You were 35-17, I think. Just 35.
Your first 4 years, yeah.
First four years as a starter, and there were a lot of factors as to why, and your contributions. The defense was ridiculous at that point in time, and you had running backs like Lamar and Ricky. Did you ever? And speaking of that defense, did you? You know, I know Coach Wanstead had a certain style of offense that he believed in, and you know, the famous
right.
quote, "Punting ain't a bad thing." But did did you ever feel any extra pressure? Did the defensive guys, were they putting any extra pressure on you guys as an offense to maybe put a few more points on the board? Or, you know, again, there's a lot of wins, but did you ever feel that from the other side of the ball?
Yeah, not really, because, you know, like you said, I think, you know, the philosophy that coach kind of put out there was he basically, you know, he knew how good our defense was.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going to be aggressive on the offensive side. And, you know, he always talked about winning games in the fourth quarter. And I said, Coach, why can't we win it in the first and second quarter? Let's open it up a little bit. You know, but it was a good formula, and we won a heck of a lot of games doing it that way. But, you know, I certainly wish that there were some times that we opened it up, you know, a little bit more. But, you know, you saw when we got out to Leeds early on, you know, it was run, and you know, if it was third and eight or more, we'd pass. And, you know, otherwise, you know, we were going to try and control the clock and push it to the fourth quarter and pull out the win in the fourth quarter. But, you know, never from, you know, the players on defense. I never felt, you know, that kind of pressure, hey, you know, make it easier on us or you know, go out and put up more points. You know, I think they expected how we, you know, operated on offense. And Juice, you remember, you know, we had some competitive practices, man.
Boy, did we. Oh, boy, did we.
I mean, there was no, you know, there was no red shirt on the quarterback, you know, back then. I mean, I had more bruises from Jason Taylor and 7-on-7 half line rush than
7-on-7
some games that we played.
Yeah. Hey, Seth is right, man. We did win a lot of games, man. You talk about some wins in the fourth quarter. One really, really sticks out in my mind, Jay. And I remember like it was yesterday, man, September 23rd. Yep. 2001, first game back after the 9-1-1 tragedy, man. And
there it is.
You lead us back in that fourth quarter right against the Raiders. The Raiders. And I'm going to tell you, I look back. I actually saw a little clip of this the other day. And if your ass doesn't get in the end zone in that last play, game's over, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
With no timeouts.
We didn't have any timeouts.
No timeouts, no nothing, man. Yeah. Tell us about that. And, of course, you become the cover boy on Sports Illustrated afterwards, man. I mean, that. I know your boys back in New York are like, that's my dude right there, right?
Oh yeah, that was a great moment, certainly.
Yeah,
you know, one I'll never forget, and you know, just how electric the stadium was. You know, that was our first game back from 9/11. You know, after we had the week off when they canceled the games for that, and we came back, and it was just, you know, the energy of you know, people getting back to normalcy, which hopefully we get soon, you know, here as well, you know, with what's going on. But, you know, going back to that fourth quarter, you know, that last drive in today's NFL, I wouldn't have had that chance to dive over the end zone, because if you rewind a few plays earlier in that drive, I think I scrambled for a first down, you know, scrambled out to the left side and ended up sliding, you know, feet first, the way everyone told me I was supposed to do. And, you know, I don't know if you remember that Trent Green hit that knocked him out and basically almost
yeah.
ended his career, but it was yeah, similar sure. one on me.
Yep.
You know, the safety for Oakland came in and, you know, stuck his helmet right underneath my chin and knocked yep. me right back to the, you know, my head, slammed against the ground. You know, I popped up off the ground and did, you know, one of these off the screen. And, you know, I knew we were still in the 2-minute drill. And I think that was when we actually used our last timeout.
Give you a second, huh?
Yeah. I said, I got
standing eight count. Jay got the standing eight count.
And I started moving, and James McKnight came up behind me and kind of grabbed me and steadied me. And, and James started, you know, waving to the sideline, you know, to KO, you know, come out, to, you know, make sure he's okay. In a second, I kind of shook it off, and you know, back then we didn't know anything about concussions
right.
and what was going on with that. You know, and today they just take me off the field. I wouldn't have a chance.
Yeah, you'd have been under that blue
protocol.
Tent.
Yeah,
but
protocol.
Yeah, you know, I turned around. I told James. I said, hey, you know, don't ever tell anyone to come over here and take me out of the
that's
game.
Right,
get
right.
back in the freaking huddle and let's go. We're gonna go win this game. And you know, next thing we know, we had the fourth down play to Dedrick Ward to continue the drive, and that last play diving into the end zone with you know, with 4 seconds left on the clock. And the sweet part about that one was, you know, how I juked Trace Armstrong.
Yeah, put a move on Trace, man.
who was teammate, obviously, the year before with us, you know, in 2000. And, you know, it was nice to give him a little juke and have that, you know, over his head for the rest of the lifetime.
Jay, do you remember the play call at all?
Oh, man, you know.
I don't want to put any pressure on you. You're getting old like me.
He just told us he might
have
been concussed, man.
Yeah, right, it was a fake toss, fake 39 toss, boot right. You know, there were a few other tags in there, you know, but it was really our 2-point play
right.
At the time. It was a lot of different options, you know, right. run pass, you know, four guys flooding the end zone over to the right side. And, you know, once I saw that window and, you know, saw that I had a chance, you know, it was do or die right then. And, you know, I knew I had to get across that line. Otherwise, you know, it was going to come back on me. But, you know, that was some game. Such good memories, man.
Yeah, in the dirt too, right? Remember that,
exactly.
that time
yeah.
of year, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Good stuff.
Great stuff. And, you know, the reality is, I mean, we could talk a lot about football, and I think that's a great moment to take a break on the football side of it, because I want to talk about something perhaps a little bit more interesting, Jay.
Uh-oh.
We've had a lot of guys on the tank here talk about the epic games in the back of the charter. on the way back than the flights, you know? And so
after wins only, right? Jay?
Of course.
Well, I don't know. Some of those guys in the 70s and 80s, it was a little different, right? But so in between was a game that Juice has told us about. And, you know, there's a rumor that you were a big Bure guy. And might have had to pay out a few times in Bure, but I don't know. We want to hear.
I might have won a few times too. So.
Well, that's what I want to know.
Yeah, actually, you know, it was funny. Bure was more a game, that I played down at Jacksonville. It was the guys in that locker room put the Dolphins card games to shame. But I got there and I actually tried to teach some guys Bure in Miami to play and. And we ended up settling on a game called 7.5.
I remember 7.5.
Yes, so we played a lot of 7.5 on the on the Dolphins charter games, and I remember when Junior Seau came, and he was certainly a big part of those games as well. You know, we had that one game in the hurricane, the preseason game that we went to New Orleans. The hurricane had just hit, and you know, they told us, you know, we were talking about boycotting the game and, because, they were putting orders and the hurricane was going to hit at the time that we were flying back. And they assured us that, you know, we were going to be able to fly back to be with families and get back and make sure everyone was okay. So we left New Orleans. We get to fly back halfway in the air. They said, we're going to have to land in Tampa Bay and bus you guys back over to across Alligator Alley in the hurricane, back to Miami. And, it was by that time, it was probably like 4 a.m. that we're coming back. And Junior and I were the only two guys that were awake. We were sitting in the back of the bus across Alligator Alley watching the bus shake from all the wind and playing back there. And we had a blast doing that. And, we had some good games there. Sam Madison was always a big part of it. Mm-hmm. Ricky played a lot. Sean Wooden, and I got a few words for Sam Madison on the 7.5. Pot and I'm good.
7.5 is a great game. That's a great. I remember. I think I might have had a couple wins against you, Jay. I know how the rules were in those games where, if you didn't pay up from the week before, you probably couldn't play on the plane the next road trip. You know what I mean? So I remember an envelope I got from you under my door. I think we're out of San Francisco. And it wasn't very kind of you, Jay. I think you had my money in it. I think it said, fuck you, OJ, or something. But it was cool, though. I'm just happy to have my money.
Right, you got paid, didn't you?
That's right.
I love it.
That's right, man. Good stuff, man. I love those games. I loved them when you could play – right when you got on the plane. That means you won, because you couldn't play after a loss. If you lost, there's some people played later, but especially on a long trip. But for the most part, sit your ass in your seat, eat your food, think about the loss, get ready for the next week. But when you got a win, it was a fun time on that plane.
Oh yes, no doubt about it.
Man, that's good stuff. We could spend much more time, talking about the past, Jay, but we've got you in the tank. So we have to talk about the current Dolphin situation.
Of course.
Think about it. You were there what 20 years ago, I think, last time you were up in there.
Yeah, signed in 2000, 20 years.
How about that? Wow. And imagine this. We've got another Ivy League quarterback in there working with Chan Gailey. What are the odds of that, right?
Right. 20 years later, we're back to square one.
Yeah. So what do you think about that combo? I love Chan Gailey. I was telling people he's one of the smartest coordinators I've ever been around. I think we had a 6 count one time, Jay, or something, 6 or 8 count. I've never heard of, people think he's just trying to draw somebody offside, but we really do have a count right there.
Yes. Yep.
You know what I mean?
Chan was, tremendous, a teacher of the game, just the fundamentals. I mean, I remember, the first thing I kind of, noticed when we were going through install and everything was, how precise he was in the run game with run blocking. And I learned a ton just on how run schemes, operated, just going through, with Chan Gailey, on that, just, where a fullback should fit in, on a block against a linebacker, how the running back should read, those. And it certainly helped as a quarterback knowing, when you do have to audible between different runs, what's your best look, going against a certain defense and what's your best run to get to with that. And then, the next thing that, impressed me a great deal about Chan was, you know, his ability to game plan and create matchups. Look, he kept a lot of the stuff that we did pretty simple, in terms of the plays that we had going. You know, we didn't have, 95 plays going into a game, but, you know, he made sure that we were scattered out so well that, you know, he'd create the right formation and motion to get a great matchup on a simple play. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was, those were the two things that, you know, I remember him being so, effective and efficient, as a coordinator with and teaching the game and game planning, towards an opponent.
What do you think, Tua can expect from Chan? I mean, I know you talk about his teaching, man, but how's he going to treat the young guy, you think, in camp?
Well, he's going to put some pressure on it. He's going to expect a lot out of him, and but he's definitely going to teach him a lot. And I think it's a great coordinator, for Tua to be around, and certainly a great veteran quarterback, to learn from and fits the views. You know, been around the league a long time, been in a lot of different offenses. Had some success. Over the years, and certainly a guy, to model after in terms of preparation and game planning. I don't care as much as, I'm sure Saban and Alabama put into preparation. It's a different level, anytime you step up to the next level, and Tua still got a lot to learn, to get there.
Good stuff. So I'm going to go off script for a second, Juice, and then we won't keep you too much longer, Jay. But one of the guys that we have as an upcoming guest that we had a chance to sit down with was a guy that was with you for a couple seasons, and Ray Lucas. And, Ray is Jersey till he dies. He says he's got it on his skin.
Lukey Luke.
And we talked about Ray, you come from the Jets and you walk into Miami and you're in the quarterback room and it's a Jersey guy and a New York guy. And he said you guys hit it off right away. What was that like? I know Ray had a tough go at it, when you went down against Denver, and he talked a little bit about that Buffalo game. But just talk about that relationship with you and Ray in that quarterback room.
Oh, I love Ray, man. He, it was good to hear that New York accent and Northeast accent, down there. And you talk about the swagger, from before. Ray had as much swagger as anyone out there, and we just hit it off and played off each other on that. And it was great, having him in. I was a guy, a lot of times, in the locker room that, a little bit more reserved and more, lead by example. And if I had to, get on someone, I would, but, I wasn't a run the mouth, yell at everyone, type of guy, and I couldn't get a word in edgewise when Ray was in the room. He was just nonstop, and I had some fun just watching him go. And, we had a lot of good, good laughs and fun times in the quarterback room, when he was around.
I can only imagine. Well, we'll have to, when that episode posts, we'll make sure to send you a link for that one. You'll have a good time with it for sure.
Oh, yeah.
The final thing I wanted to ask, and you kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier with the camps, South Florida, all these years later, has still remained a very special place for you. I know you're down here a few times a year when you can be. Talk about your work with Brookwood Camps and what still brings you down here and other reasons why you just remain connected to the South Florida community.
Yeah, well, certainly, South Florida is a second home for me. Number one, my grandparents, were snowbirds back when I was a kid. So, I was spending time in South Florida when Glades Road was one lane both ways. I remember and Lions Road was the end of the earth, going out west. But, things have certainly changed since then. And, my mom still has a house down there. She's down there quarantining herself right now. Unfortunately, she can't get back up to New York now to be with the family. But she has a house down there that keeps me coming back down to see family and friends and certainly to help recruit for the summer camp, like you said, for Brookwood Camps. We still get a lot of campers and staff from down in South Florida area, so it's a great community. A lot of people call it the sixth borough of New York. As a New Yorker, you feel very comfortable and at home in South Florida environment. you know, when I first started up my football camp, which, you know, I know, you know, you might remember I did a version of it down in South Florida, you know, throughout my time. We used to host
at high school up in Boca,
Olympic Heights High School. Olympic Heights, yeah. You know, had all the guys that came up and did that, you know, but I also had my football camp up in Glens Bay at Brookwood Camps, and it was under the Primetime Football Camps moniker. Back when I first started the camp up, one of the coaches that coordinated the camp with me was assistant coach at Poly Prep High School in Brooklyn. And we had about 30 or 40, you know, guys from Poly Prep come up. Two of those guys were Danny and Luis Flores, who are Brian's younger brothers. Oh, wow. And during that year, Brian was at BC, and we needed to get counselors. And, you know, we're in overnight camp. And we needed, you know, we used to get all our college coaches as counselors. And Brian came over as a counselor primetime camp. So I knew Brian way back when he was in college. I still talk with his younger brothers here and there who are living in the New York area. And, you know, one's a teacher, one's an equipment manager at Columbia University. And, you know, just such a great family. And when he got hired by Miami, I just knew, you know, the character that he brought, the toughness, you know, that, you know, he lived through growing up and overcame, and certainly the mentorship under Bill Belichick. I think, you know, Miami's under some real good footing right now with Brian Flores at the helm.
That is awesome. What are the odds that the Miami Dolphins head coach was once an overnight camp counselor at Jay Feeder?
You see that? I bring Harvey Green and Brian Flores together at Brooklyn Camp.
I won't put anything past you, man. You've learned well from your dad. You've learned very well from your dad. That's awesome. And while we did want to have you in the tank in person, it was awesome to be able to do this, man. We really appreciate you spending time. Juice, I think about it. I had 8 years with the Dolphins, 4 years with Dan Marino as our quarterback, and 4 years with Jay. Yep. As our quarterback, and real lucky and fortunate for me. Great friendship that we were able to build over the years. You know, and even Juice, I told you the story one time on the sidelines where someone tried to say that we were cousins. He started screaming, "Mike Fiedler, Mike Fiedler." Who is this idiot? You know, and he was trying to give me a hard time on the sidelines. So, I don't know. He's saying all Jewish guys looked alike or whatever it was, but Jay and I had a real special bond. I appreciate you taking the time out here, and it was just great having you in the tank.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We'll have to get together in person real soon now.
No doubt.
Jay's a great leader, man. Great leader, man, and we appreciate you diving in, Jay.
Oh, Jay, thanks. Always a pleasure being with you guys.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dolphins, number one, of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank, go get your aqua orange, yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rocking with OJ and Seth when we dive up in that fish tank. Fans with attitude, we okay, got the dive up for in them diehards. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school, mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tales, in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie, bringing up stories we never heard to the public. Bet we love it, Dolphins fans never budget. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. You looking at that fish tank, it's time to dive in. Fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rapping with OJ and Seth when you dive up in that fish tank. Dolphins with attitude, we about to dive up in that fish tank.